Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
What's up, D3 Nation? We are back. It is officially May. Holy crap. This season is flying by. We are rolling here. We're excited for a really action-packed episode. A ton of stuff to get to. We're going to try and hit as much as we can, even if it means being a little bit more zoomed out than potentially we have been. But we're going to try and make sure we are pretty vast about our footprint. Big Dog, first and foremost, how you doing?
Oh, Dan, doing well, man. Doing well. Happy to be here with you. We're down a conference championship weekend. You know, big things happening here in the D3 lacrosse world. So happy to be covering it here with you.
100%. Like you said, we have a ton to get to. You, any criticisms of my intro? Anything to add?
Besides a swarm update, nothing really.
I think you're eager to get to it. Sometimes it naturally pops up, but let's do it. Let's knock it right out.
Had to make sure the boys got their shine because they had a massive 10-1 win this weekend. We got two more games before the HOCO championship. So looking forward there. The boys are rolling here coming into the end of the season.
You should have made them wait and at least like listen to the whole episode before they got their shout out.
I know. Yeah. Well, I felt bad. I called them out pretty harsh last week. So want to make sure that they get their shine this week. They get the credit.
How was Little Dog this weekend? Was he eating up?
Oh, dude. The boys started off slow offensively. It was like 1-1 in the beginning of the game early on. And then Little Dog.
Did he challenge someone's dignity? Did he ask them if they're a real man or if they like to get guarded by short sticks?
Oh, he was getting all up in their grill, asking them everything about that. And yeah, stood on his head, kept us in the game. Guess what? It started off 1-1. Game finished 10-1. My boy didn't let me any more goals.
9-0 run, huh?
Yep. 9-0 for the Swarm, so we're sitting pretty.
Does Little Dog have a little dog himself?
Like a littler dog?
Is there a backup Little Dog?
There was somebody that tried out to be the littler dog, and I was like, hey, we already got a little dog. Like the pound is full.
Say Little Dog goes to make a save on a one-on-one in tight, left-handed attackman, gets to the front of the cage, throws a big, heavy pump fake, goalie jumps, and ends up ripping his hamstring in half.
Oh.
Left-handed attackman keeps coming across the front of the cage, dumps it, and scores. What happens to Little Dog?
Little Dog. Well, we got my man Isaac. He's our emergency backup goalie.
You got an e-bug.
Yeah. We got the e-bug.
Got it.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a cool term for it.
Thank you. I made it up myself just now.
It's good.
You should use it. Claim it as your own. Nobody will claim. Nobody will question you.
Nope. You're our e-bug from now on.
All right. Well, let's get to the D3 then.
Yeah, let's move it on though. Some great stuff. Now, before we hit our weekend review like we normally do, I think it's pretty convenient for us to maybe go through in a zoomed out playoff bracket explanation, you know, because a lot of what we're going to be talking about are AQ bids, at-large bids, things like that, which might make a little bit more sense after we've explained it before we get into it a bit. Would you agree there, Dan?
Yeah, this is like when we did our little pre-pod session, we described this as the glossary segment, the index, the glossary of the episode.
Yep.
So hopefully if we are talking about teams and conference situations and all that type of stuff at some point throughout the episode, we've already defined things. And I realize like some of you guys are some more veteran listeners, but hopefully you can either just hit the quick fast forward if you think you're already going to know all this stuff, or you can just suffer through it on behalf of you know, our new listeners, which we get a new crop of between freshmen and their parents pretty much, and you know, relatives of the sorts. That's pretty much our clientele here.
Yeah,
our fan base.
That's our MO right there. So I'm going to do a broad spectrum, and Dan, you break it down for us a little bit more intricately as I go through it here. So stop me whenever you feel the need. But we have a total of, 29, 28 plus 10, 38 bids total That's going to break down for between 27 conference championships with an AQ is what we call it. Then there's the Pool B team, which is just one bid, and that comes with a conference championship without an AQ. And then finally, there's the Pool C, which is 10 at-large bids. So this would be teams that maybe didn't win their conference but had an extremely tough strength of schedule, played really strong throughout the year, and still deserved to make it into the tournament. We've seen a lot of strong teams come out of each of these pools, and I think, you know, at least the past few years that I've been covering this with you, I don't know the exact breakout, but I think a team's almost won from every pool. So, you know, doesn't matter really where you get selected. It's all about kind of how the seeding shakes out and where you land and your picks there. So, Dan, talk us through a little bit more about a pool A bid. What does that look like?
Yeah, so that's your typical, like, conference champion. Like, you and I, 2016, we made the NCAA tournament, and it was because we upset Salisbury. Correct. Yep. And it was, there's going to be some Seagulls that are like, of course, that's the reference that we use. But you have to dumb things down for Caleb, okay?
Very there's simple.
There's the backhanded stab right at him, okay? I'm sorry. It's the only option that I had to make it simple enough for him to understand it. So that's the situation. I don't recall. I guess we had a good enough resume that we were probably in either way that year. But you take the thinking out of it, you take the hope out of it, you take all of it out of it. You lock yourself in when you win your conference, so long as your conference qualifies as one of the, you know, AQ owning, AQ, I guess, qualifying, conferences.
Yep. Good way to put it. And then there are a few conferences that don't, you know, meet those standards to be an AQ conference. We were talking about it earlier. It might be something with the amount of teams in the conference. Not exactly sure the way that plays out.
No, that is exactly it.
That is exactly the way.
Right on that.
We know
it's 100% number of teams. I'm pretty sure it's either six or seven.
Okay. So if you are below that threshold, then you do not get an AQ for winning your conference.
And the way that I pretty much understand it is it's seven. Seven is the rule. But a lot of times you end up with conferences that have six teams that get an AQ, and it's essentially just because they are in the process of adding a team or just lost a team recently and are still, like, granted a grace period to, like, replace them, in which they don't end up losing their AQ during that time while they're out. That's we are dumb, okay? Like, we do our best to get educated and schooled up on all this stuff, but take it for at least a little bit of a grain of salt, okay? So whether that's 100% right on the head,
who knows? But it's a good starting point, at least, you know? Let's start.
It's the gist of it, for sure. It's the gist of it.
And we know
it's perfect. It could be perfect. I don't know.
We know if it's wrong, and we hear it a lot, that we started a rumor. So that's cool. That's cool, I guess.
When we are wrong and people call us out, we're really good at being about hand up. Hand up.
Hey, I told you I didn't know for sure.
We're doing our best here.
Yep. And then finally, our Pool C teams. So these are 10 at-large bids. And this is mainly based on strength of schedule, if I'm correct here, Dan. But expect to see teams possibly like Tufts, who is not going to be a conference championship winner. We'll get to that a little bit later. But expect a team like that, who's had a lot of good wins, had a really strong strength of schedule, to be a good team that would fit an at-large bid. But does regionality play into it a bit at all, Dan?
Good question. So yes and no. It factors in. There's kind of two different definitions of it. When you say regionality, there's like two different directions you can go. The first is the landscape of Division III lacrosse is broken into five different regions. And then within that, the teams are ranked. And then it's basically like the committee goes through and they take a team from each region, right? And even the AQs are ranked within the region. So you basically subtract your teams from the rankings within each region that already hit an AQ. And then you're left with your potential at-large bids. And then it's basically trying to go through and take as many from each different region, pick and choose, until it becomes like, okay, very clear discrepancy between a variety of things, as you indicated, like strength of schedule becomes a factor at that point. And it's really kind of at that point just on the committee to talk through and think through where the discrepancy lies. And this is where last year, and we saw that, like, and this was, it's a new system this way. Like, a lot of D3 vets are used to the two region north south, right? And that's where so much of that, like, north versus south, like, you know, rivalries came from. But if you think back to 2022, like, RIT and Union played each other in the national championship, two teams from the same conference. And it was because of all the regionality of it, and Union ended up going down into the southern bracket. And you've seen so much more of that over the last 4 or 5 years, you know, since it's been even less than that since this change. So regionality plays a factor in two ways. One, like, yes, the landscape is broken into five regions. Those regions are ranked. And then the committee chooses teams based on, you know, going through the rankings of each region.
Gotcha. Okay.
That said, like, yes, there's obviously going to be some regions that, like, it's based on geography. So, like, a region in the Northeast might have more teams that are nationally ranked and nationally competitive than a team in, or than a region in, you know, a different part of the country that doesn't have quite so many of those types of teams. And so, again, that's, like, the balance that then the committee has to weigh.
Gotcha. Okay. And just for our viewers, this is something that isn't on the outline, so it might throw you off here, but we keep referencing this committee. Who's part of this committee? What are we, is this just some, I don't sort know, of like Illuminati?
The NCAA has a committee, and there's a variety of, like, older coaches, former coaches. Like, I don't even really know. Good question.
I imagine, like, the, I don't know, like, the Illuminati from,
I know the name of the guy that's the head of the committee. Because he does some of the communicating and stuff like that. But I don't know specific, like, members of the committee. Okay. I do wonder if it's public somewhere. I could look it up for you. Remind me some point in the through the week, and I'll go through and I'll see if what I can dig up for you.
All right. Well, tune in next week. Maybe we'll have an update on that.
Before you move on, though, the other aspect of regionality, you're supposed to ask me about regionality aspects 1 and 1, 1A and 1B.
Okay. 1B is the pairing-wise?
1A, nope. That's all. Ooh, that's on the outline too, but that's not. Yes. Okay. That's a. Maybe we won't even say anything more than the word pairwise and just leave it at that. That'll be our tease.
Oh, okay. That's hot. Leave the listeners guessing. I like it.
The other aspect of regionality is not about selecting the field, is the sentence that I've been trying to utter for, like, 3 minutes. That is all about matchups. So once the field is selected, teams won't – the NCAA basically will do everything in their power so that teams don't travel over 500 miles, because at that point, over 500 miles, they have to pay for flights. Within that, they'll move teams around. They can bust teams down. That's why Union down to CNU. I need to relook it up, but I'm pretty sure it was like as close to 500 miles as you can get, like maybe 498, you know, like, let's do the check real quick.
Yeah. Oh, I'm on it.
Schenectady, New York to Newport News. But also I love the way that you spelled it on the outline. It's not pairwise, it's pairwise. But for D3 enthusiasts, not to be an alarmist, but you should do some Googling on that whole system.
Oh, by the way, I got Union College to Newport News, Virginia is 549 miles.
Got it. So if the maybe they just overlooked the 49, or maybe exactly like Newport, like campus maybe to campus,
yeah,
you know, works better. So it's something like that, you know, and that's why that ended up working all in 2022, just to use that as the example, because that's what comes to mind to me, off the top of the head, is like the most premier example that led to it. Like, I mean, two teams from the same conference, like conference rivals, played each other in the national championship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing is out of the window in this tournament. You know,
it's also a really good segue into talking about this weekend, because those teams played each other on this slate.
They sure did. Yeah, you want to jump into that one?
Sure. Keep, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Boom. Well, we had quite a slammer of a weekend, if I do say so myself. Friday, actually, let's go to Friday first so we can keep it chronological.
You yourself had a slammer of a weekend, if I don't recall.
It was a fun one. Yeah. It was quite busy.
I just meant busy. Fun. I meant busy.
Yeah, it was busy. It was very busy, but not too busy to catch some lacrosse, because there was plenty of good stuff going on that I tuned into.
Not too busy to butcher some tweets.
Oh, I did butcher a few. Sorry for the few that did have to be my tweets with instructions in it. Not my brightest showing there on Twitter.
Also called Williams Amherst, but who's counting?
Hey, nobody
both,
knows, right?
They're both purple and ended up losing. It's not our fault that we confused them.
Mammoth and a cow, those are two very, very similar things. Both have four legs and fur. Kinda. They have a hide. It's still a little hair. Anyway, I digress. Let's get into Friday, where we saw Cabrini Salisbury. This was our bet of the week. And I really teased you. I enticed you to take that Cabrini +8.5. And it did not end up going your way, with which we saw Salisbury 21 over Cabrini's 9. What's that?
Can I joke repeat? And actually, I don't remember if I had the balls to send it or not. I may have backed out.
All right, hit me with a nail.
It's ironic that it took you having to side with Salisbury to finally win something.
You did tweet that. That was good.
Ah!
Yeah, you did tweet that. I was going to say, as much as it pains me to say I was right, I'm right. But it doesn't feel good. Doesn't make me happy inside.
Did you laugh at my tweet?
It was good. I don't know if I liked it or not, but I'm unsalty enough now to give you a like.
But in the moment, you were kind of salty.
I was a little salty about it. Because it made too much sense. I was mad.
It's always the true. It's always the true ones that sting the most.
They hurt the most, man. But I had some high hopes for the boys. I thought it was going to be a barn burner. Didn't end up being that way. But Salisbury keeps rolling. They roll right into the now. So we've just talked about a lot about conference stuff. What's Salisbury got conference wise coming up here?
Yep, good question. So they are basically a write-in at the start of the season right now. Salisbury, CNU, one of them is Pool B. And so long as, you know, the season has gone the way that it's gone the last few years, one of them is a lock for an at-large. It's gone. You don't really necessarily need to do the whole one of them whole thing. It's been Salisbury takes the Pool B because they've won the conference. But the Coastal Lacrosse Conference just doesn't have an AQ. So there's that.
There you go. So taking that Pool B bid, most likely Salisbury there. Let's get into Saturday. So Saturday, first one on the slate. We'll get to the Hamilton Tufts one, but first one on the slate for me has got to be the St. Lawrence 5-goal win over RPI 15-10. This was quite shocking to me. Not that St. Lawrence won. I know that they had it in them. I know they got the guys to do it, and we've seen them in person really, really do it. But to win by 5 goals and make this sort of statement is quite impressive. So very dominant performance from the boys there, and look to see them keep rolling here going into the conference play.
Well said. I think you keep it rolling, buddy.
Love it. Okay. Let's get right into our fun one, our biggest upset of the weekend by far. Hamilton going to Jumbo Field, beating Tufts 14-13. And it really started with the 7-0 run, I thought. You know, you go up 7-0 big, you know Tufts is going to come back. but it's just, can you surmount a big enough lead before they start to crawl back? And Hamilton finally did that. They showed a little peaks of it, little sparks of it in the Mustang Classic that we watched. Up until the third quarter, that was a back and forth game. So I think that really led to them saying, we know we have it in us to play with them for 60 minutes. If we just put it out on the field, it's going to be a dogfight. And they made it a dogfight, and they came out ahead here.
No doubt. Yeah, I think that was a really good job of setting the table. And I'll take it a little further. I watched a lot of this game. Question for you, and we've talked about this. When a team comes in and kind of throws a zone at you, and that slows down a team like Tufts that really wants to kind of run at you and get going downhill and kind of take advantage of single individual matchups, all that type of stuff, we can get into. But I think ultimately at the core here, it starts with they would go down 6-1 in the first quarter. That is less about X's and O's and less about they zoned us and this, that, and the other. And I think it's more about early game, just execution. And it's a weird stage where sometimes some of these teams play with so much pressure that, it's counterproductive. And I say 6-1, they actually went down 7-1.
7-1. Ooh. That is a hole. Yeah, so quite the game there. We'll get into Hamilton's path to the NESCAC championship a little bit later, but definitely an interesting result that I had to highlight. We'll keep it moving though. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just gonna say and this is one of the ones that I mentioned earlier. I got to watch a lot this weekend. This is one that I watched a ton, but and I know this is one of your trivia questions, but I'm going to throw it back at you before you even get to it. There were over 100 shots taken in this game. That'll be the context I give you. What was the discrepancy?
Gotta be, I'm still saying Tufts put the pressure on, gotta be 65, 40, somewhere around there.
Pretty close. 70s or 37. So I said over 100 shots. So.
Okay.
Which I guess I should have told you the exact number and then asked, but you probably would have hit it right on the head. But again, I think it was one of those instances where in that first game, it's kind of this, you're just waiting for that Tufts run to hit. But it never really comes in this game, and that's a virtue of the 70 shots, right? I don't know that they get to that if, some of those end up in the back of the net early, right?
Yep. But agreed. Every you make quarter, it a dogfight right? early on, it completely changes the game there.
Yeah, and I mean, it also kind of makes the moral of this week, really simple, shooting percentage, right? They have over 15 shots. Excuse me, over 14 shots in every quarter. They have 4 shots in overtime. And maybe it's not shooting percentage, but working for the best shot, being a little bit more patient and trying to find something that's a little higher percentage because, that's just what is needed for, this group of, individuals on offense.
Yeah. Yep. Well said there, Dan. I'm going to keep us moving along if you're cool with that. And I'll stay up north, though. We'll go to Middlebury, where we had Middlebury Amherst. Another great game. This one, I can't really get a read on Middlebury. It's been tough all year. Before the game, I probably would have been leaning Amherst just a little bit because they've had some big wins late. But this one ended up being 9-6. Middlebury takes the cake, moves on. So Dan, I personally didn't catch too much of this one. Did you catch any of this? What'd you see from here?
Yeah, I did. And it was a bit lower scoring, right, than what we're used to in the NESCAC.
Very surprised about that.
Yeah, it's an interesting, result there. And if you go and you look, you kind of expect a ton of goalie, stats there, but it wasn't necessarily that either. Really, I thought it was a ton of just solid defensive play all around. I think it's really interesting, like, and this is something I'm starting to put more stock into, but like some element of like just teams kind of having, you know, their another team's number. And we saw earlier in the year that Middlebury kind of took it to Amherst. It was the first game of the season, granted. So, like, obviously a ton has changed. But I think it just kind of gave me the nod that, like, Middlebury, again, at home was kind of, you know, the favorite going into it. And, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Type out there. Middlebury moves on through the NESCAC playoffs. We will now leave the NESCAC if you're ready to roll.
We'll a few head down. Individual shout outs. I think we got time for it, eh?
Hit me with some good stuff.
So I would have guessed, and you said like pregame predictions, I would have guessed Nicholas Kopp kind of owned the X there. And William Monroe for Middlebury really did a great job. Not just narrowing the gap or evening it, but he won it, you know, straight up in 11-18. 11 face-off wins out of 18 attempts. So really impressive there. Luke Simpson came in with like preseason All-American honors. I feel like we've been a little bit quiet on him this season, but he's excellent. He had a great game. He showed every bit of why he had garnered that, you know, attention early. And, you know, he had 5 ground balls and 4 called turnovers on the day. So really impressive stuff out of Luke Simpson as well. And, yeah, I think Middlebury, we've mentioned, you know, coming into the season that they were pretty well-ranked, Bowdoin pretty well-ranked, 2 teams that I thought, you know, kind of made strides last year nationally. So definitely interesting to watch their kind of progression here through the rest of the NESCAC tournament and into NCAA play.
Yep. Well said there, Dan. Very well said. Looking forward to that. We'll move down south, though, where we saw a great game between CNU and WNL. For them, I believe, finished out both of their regular seasons. Got everything concluded there for them. And we did see a tight bout, as I would expect, but CNU does win it there 12-8. Dan, what'd you see from this one?
This one I haven't re-watched a whole ton of yet. Just because of all of the teams in the landscape, these are 2 teams that I'm already really familiar with. Right. Like we saw them at Mustang Classic. So it was, you know, 2 teams that we had to the opportunity to catch live right in front of our face a couple times. So I haven't digested this game quite as much. But what I did see when I did tune in was Ryan Young picking off skip passes. And I immediately was like, okay, well, That would have been something that was on the bingo card. So just
yeah, that's something that he does quite frequently. Yep.
But I think it's always an interesting matchup. Always, you know, a really good game. The timing of the year right now for this game, I thought was really interesting. It feels like CNU didn't want to go in to Coastal play without, you know, another really strong late season test that wasn't, you know, just Salisbury, right? And so I think it feels like the exact result they would have wanted, a 4-5 goal win over a top 10 team that'll send them into, you know, the rest of the season with confidence. And WNL, maybe you get the exact same thing that they wanted, which is a really good team that's going to challenge them, test them, expose a few things ahead of them doing the exact same thing and seeing a Lynchburg team that they took to a 1-goal game. So, yeah, I think this is, you know, a really good matchup. And, you know, I'm excited to kind of dive in and digest the actual specifics of it a little bit.
Yep. Yep, that will be exciting. I can't wait to do that myself. Saw a lot of like good pictures and stuff like that from Instagram and whatnot. So gotta be some cool stuff that happened if it's popping up on the timeline. So we'll be checking that out. We'll stay down south though, as we move it on to another, I would say the second biggest upset of the day. Easily number one or number two, which has gotta be WAC 18, Gettysburg 14. pretty surprised when I saw this. I thought this would be a good tune-up game for Gettysburg going into the Centennial Conference play, but didn't seem to be the case as WAC takes it to him early. Now, this is all a moot point because they did play, what, yesterday as we're recording this? Today or yesterday? They played very recently. Results a little bit different. Yeah, a couple hours ago. Results a little bit different, but very surprised at this. Maybe it was a slight overlook. Is that what you're chalking this up to?
Overlook on the road late season against a team you're supposed to beat. I think a combination of all that type of stuff. And then you go back down there. End up leaving with a victory this time.
Yep, which we'll get into that a little bit more here. And then finally, not an upset, but a very surprising result here as York found themselves in a little bit of a battle with Messiah. High scoring affair as it was 21-19. York takes the cake, but we saw 40 goals in this contest, Dan. Not for the faint of heart. I tuned into it and towards the end, and it was just back and forth, goal, 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 nonstop. So a lot of fun for a viewer. I wouldn't say the same if I'm a, general York fan speaking. Would like to see a little bit more of a dominant performance and kind of shaky going into the playoff run here, but it is what it is. Got to keep rolling. Got to keep the morale high on the squad. So.
Definitely interesting. Higher scoring we would have expected, closer than we would have expected. I think it's important to note that York was missing a piece of the puzzle there defensively for him. I think Messiah's attack is really impressive. They have a guy, Chad Teresky, at 99 points on the season, 46 and 53. Really, really impressive stats, obviously. But, he's great. He's fantastic, really smooth. And he gave, York fits. And he had 7 points against Stevenson as well. He hasn't had less than 5 points in the month of April. So really impressive stuff there, obviously, from him there for Messiah.
Yeah, that's awesome. And York is looking to change things around. I don't know if you saw the big news today, but they had a huge new recruit signing with CJ Adams coming in out of Dallas Town, PA. 11-year-old absolute stud. I believe he's going to be wearing number 0 for the squad going into the playoff run, but caught some highlights of him. His stick side hip shot is lethal.
Oh,
lethal. Yep. So be on the lookout for CJ.
No, I hadn't seen any of this. How are you so privy to all this information? Did they send you like a news release?
I'm basically the Adam Scheffler of D3.
Did Scott Geis send you a you're the Scheffler?
Any news that gets broken about any sort of movement, it goes through the big dog first.
Got it. Wow. Okay. Well, that is very cool. I'm gonna have to get tuned up and schooled up there on all the roster additions.
Yeah, we'll go to IHOP one morning. I'll break it down for you.
All right, perfect. I'd love that.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll keep moving here. Any other big games that you wanted to hit, or any noteworthy type stuff? I mean, everything's noteworthy, of course. But any sort of big things you want to hit before we get onto our statistical players of the week?
Maybe RPI St. Lawrence. I don't know that we touched on that and as much as we should have. We kind of breezed by it, and it's worth a little bit of a deep dive. What do you think?
Okay, let's dive back into it a little bit more. I'm happy to do so.
I did watch a good chunk of it. I have two guys to shout out. The first of which is Judge Murphy, who you could have guessed
Say, is it Judge Murphy?
Yes. But I thought, again, like, he's very talented, and I love when teams, take advantage of every bit of, like, the hot hand of a player and kind of ride it. And I thought that he just got going early. He scores the first goal of the game, and you can kind of tell he's just like going to assert himself. Ted Wilson scores, then he scores again. He's got 2 out of the first 3. And like we said, I'm pretty sure I mentioned something about it online, but like, it felt like they were just relentlessly throwing him the ball, putting the ball in his stick, sending a pick his way, and he would either like jab hard topside and either break off and come out underneath, or like just come off of it topside and get to the front and, you know, sweep across the field and score. You know, he feeds it when you slide to him. He's just like really polished and buttoned. And, you know, he got going early and they go on a 6-1 run to start the game. And, you know, it's kind of over before you even know it. And as soon as they stop the bleeding, St. Lawrence goes on another run. It gets to 12-3. And it's like, you know, this is really getting out of hand quick.
Yeah, I feel like every game that RPI gets down in a good bit, it's really hard for them to climb back. They're a good team that's built to be in the lead and maintain a lead. But when they're down and trying to crawl out of a hole, that's when we tend to see them have their issues.
I disagree. I think that's just a hard thing to do in lacrosse, is to come back and, you know, win games. But I think RPI is built to do it because they face off well, and with you know, someone that plays with really offensive instincts, they 10 man constantly, so like they have the chance to turn you over. You know, they get typically, he didn't have his best game in this game, maybe we jinxed him a little bit. I do think that there's like an element of this was the best goalie battle, and you probably should have said this, but this was like the best goalie battle of the season. With Marinello and
Perry.
Yes. I was getting insecure about Perry and Post again. But like, I think the element of like the 10 man and like Perry being behind it and being like aggressive, he picks the ball up and goes and like, you know, clean saves or like outlets going the other way. So I think they are kind of built to do it. They did it against Middlebury early in the season where they were down going into the fourth quarter, came back, and it was like a really long, really big run to come back and win it. So.
Okay. All right.
Argument. Well,
we can agree to disagree. I'll wait to see more film. I'll wait till more information comes out.
I love your argument.
I don't like fighting with you, man. I love you.
I love you too.
Yeah, I don't want to. Don't.
I'm sorry I called you silly.
Hey, you're a silly guy. It happens.
I don't even mean it. I just do it for fan entertainment.
I know. The people like when you say it.
They totally do.
Eat it up. All right. Well, you want to get into our statistical players of the week now?
Yeah, we have a really good Yeah, we have a really good batch.
Yes, I would say
that every week, though.
I would say we got a double.
This week is another really good batch. Every week's a good batch.
But this week we got a special, I'd say a double batch.
Well, it's kind of that whole, like, remember, we would talk about these guys if we could talk about them.
Gotcha.
But we can't, so we shan't.
Gotcha. Okay. We will not divulge too much of these first few, but then we'll really, really take a deep dive into the last four.
It's just the rules of the segment. We can't talk about, this is the segment where we talk about teams that we don't normally talk about as much because we get the larger stat lines that are like, you know, video game numbers.
Yep.
Otherwise, we would talk about like Wyatt Whitlow having 7 goals and 0 turnovers for Roanoke tonight.
Like, that's pretty good.
That's impressive. Pretty good performance.
Or we could talk about Dustin Miller having 20 saves, 66% in a 10-7 loss. I mean, it is still a loss, but 10-7 having 20 saves, it's pretty ridiculous.
And I mean, just to throw out another guy that we won't talk about because we can't, so we shan't, is Quinn Mather, who had 3-3 tonight, 6 points, also 0 turnovers, and that's in a conference, you know, a win or go home, season on the line status.
That's when the big dogs come out to play.
You can't say careers on the line for anybody these days because who knows?
5th years, you don't know anymore.
Who knows?
You just never know. But let's get to guys that we can talk about. You want to do that?
Yes.
All right.
I'll start it. And this is Dylan McKeegee.
I like it. You're asking me?
For Wittenberg, 12 points, 9 goals, 3 assists. Very Ooh. Impressive. Get yourself a spot on the statistical players of the week there, Dylan M.
Dylan, great work. Well, I'm going to go with Davis Schneider, my boy out of Grove City. Can't leave the Grove City boys hanging. 11 points. 11. You heard that right. 11 points, 6 goals, 5 assists versus Washington and Jefferson in that game. So great stat line there from Davis. Been lighting up the scoreboard consistently and did it again here.
And I'm going to beat you to the punch to the specialists. Beat you to the specialist punch.
Oh.
But I won't go goalies. I'm going to go Jackson Hill from Concordia, Wisconsin. Ooh. 100% at the faceoff X in 21 attempts.
Oh. Hey.
Welcome to this week's IL D3 Statistical Players of the Week. Ooh. Jackson.
Great job, Jackson. Well, I'm going to finish this off. I'm going to go defense for you. I'm going to go with Richard Vail. 7 cause turnovers, and get this, you ready for this? 13 the second. GBs.
The second.
13. Oh, the second, excuse me. Richard Vail the second. My apologies to Richard Vail the first. Congrats on having a son. But 7 cause turnovers and 13 ground balls for Francescan.
And a goal or an assist. A point.
We're not exactly sure what that point was, but he did have a point on top of the combined 20 caused turnovers and ground balls. So, Richard, congrats to you. Shout out.
Boom. I told you it was a great batch.
It was a good batch. We never did. I feel like we never disappoint.
I feel like we haven't featured Franciscan, Concordia, Wisconsin, Wittenberg all season, and I'm glad we got something in. Boom.
Yeah. Hashtag featured. Speaking of hashtags and featured, you want to go into some featured Tuesday night matchups that that happened tonight?
Yes. There's one that I'm dying to get to.
Okay. I know there's a few. Let's start with the easy one because we already alluded to it. Gettysburg goes back to Washington College, rights the wrong, ends up winning 13-11. This game just happened a couple hours ago, so haven't had the full time to digest any sort of film from it yet. But I can say this is more of what I was expecting out of Gettysburg the first go around. Maybe still a little less high scoring, maybe more of a 13-8 type finish would make me feel comfortable for Gettysburg going down this playoff round. But 13-11, they still get the win. That's what's important. You gotta survive in advance, and the Bullets are doing that here.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge to take the group, go rebound, jump back on the bus, go right back down to where you got, you know, had an unfortunate result, and then pull this out and, you know, go win it. And like you said, right the wrong. We mentioned Mather. Jack Dunleavy also had 2 goals and an assist. He's a junior, so you can expect him to be back. But like we said, Mather, I don't know. He's a senior, so could be gone, could be on his, you know, final run in a college lacrosse jersey of meaningful moments, you know? So that's a huge, bump for him to be able to get 6 points and have practice tomorrow, right? Or today. Yep.
Today. Yeah, practice today.
Time warp.
There it is. Yeah, the time travel always gets me.
Time warp.
So that was a good one there. Let's take us to a little bit further north where Union Clarkson
battled.
Timeout. Flag down.
I expected you to say something about Chase Morgan.
I alluded to my Chase Morgan take. I didn't want to say it out loud, but 11 goals, too much. You got to settle in. Got to get the boys settled in.
I think the issue honestly, it's weird because they had I think they had more success in the first matchup where they lost. We can fact check that. But it's face off. They sacrifice possession constantly. So it's such a huge disadvantage that sometimes shows in goals, right?
Yep. So the face-off needs to improve just a little bit there from what Dan has seen. But you ready to move on from there?
Probably a lot of it, but yeah, all right.
A lot of it, okay. For you to feel confident in an NCAA tournament. Yeah,
it was no better the first time. 10 of 35 the first time.
There you go. Oh, looks like they've just found a way to overcome that.
This time, you're right.
This time, yeah.
Wait, no. Right, you
ready to move on now?
Wait, no. Nope.
Still no.
I was right.
You were right.
I was right.
Of course you were right.
They went 25 of 35 the first game that they lost.
Okay.
So then they went 7 of 22 this time.
And they won.
Correct. Do the math.
So maybe they were down because the face-offs weren't working, rallied behind that. They were like, we're not winning face-offs. We got to win it another way. And that got them a little more gritty.
I like your theory.
Yep. Let's roll with it.
Yep. I agree.
We'll roll with that as we continue now to roll on up north. Union and Clarkston, tough bout. This, I feel like we always talk about this game. Like, the Union always has ended up on top, in recent memory, but this always seems to be a tough contest. Similarly, we haven't been able to digest too much of the film or anything like that, but Union did pull this out by 3.
Do you recall any games in your either conference playoffs or NCAA tournament where there was a really long extended lightning delay?
In high school, I had a bad one.
Tell me, describe the story.
Oh, it was terrible for me. But if you want to hear a tragedy, I'll go right ahead. It was our junior year playoff run. We were playing Bel Air at Bel Air. We had already lost to them in the season. And we were up by 2 goals, 6 minutes left. They call lightning delay. We wait an hour. And then they say, hey, guys, we're not going to play. We're not going to finish the game tonight. You have to come back tomorrow at 2 p.m., finish the last 6 minutes. And your boy came back the next day at 2 p.m. and couldn't save a beach ball. I'm telling you, if it could have been hit by a 4-year-old's shot over to me, I could not have saved it. I couldn't save anything. They go on a 3-goal run. We lose. Playoffs over. Everyone's sad.
All right. So I was just buying time to confirm some suspicions. One of two things that I have to say. I'm sorry to hear that. First of
Thank you.
I don't want to be. I don't want to come off as. What's the word I'm looking for? Harsh?
Okay.
But you said recent memory, you don't recall Clarkston beating Union. I immediately wanted to push back, but I second-guessed myself. I wish I didn't. They beat him last year, 9-8. And I was scoreboard watching at this one as it was going down, and Clarkston was up for a bit. It's interesting. It's a game of runs, right? They say that all the time. Union goes up, and then Clarkston goes on a long extended run, and they eventually take a 2-goal lead. And that was when I happened to look. So then I went back and went all the way through the score, the box score, and all that type of stuff, and started to take a peek from there. And then Union goes on a run. So I may be a little bit of a good luck charm there, but I mentioned not having a combination of capacity and chutzpah to tweet this, but I wanted to tweet both Macon. Oh, I ruined it. That was the game I've been most excited to get to. Macon, Hampton, Sydney, and Clarkson Union as the spicy in conference potential upsets.
Yep. Dang. Yep. You alluded to the third game that I was about to hit. Good recap there. Great encompassing. Let's go to that Hampden-Sydney Randolph-Macon game that you just talked about. A 9-8. Would you call it an upset for the ODAC quarterfinals?
I mean,
okay. Yep.
Legitimately, it was the
ODAC finals.
It was the 4 versus the 5 seed. So, and the 5 seed won. So
there you go.
Yes.
Not a massive upset, but an upset.
Correct. And they played earlier in the season, which is how said seeding ended up as it was, and Hampton City won that round. So, yes.
Gotcha. Well, it all depends on what you do in the playoffs, you know? Regular season is the regular season.
True. Yeah. And this is the premier example, right? It's all about getting to this point and then being able to make a run. And in the process, hopefully creating yourself a nice at-large resume, right? A nice Pool C resume.
Yep.
Glossary check.
Oh. I have people studying up now.
You remember last year we did a bunch of Paul's personal anecdotes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yep.
All right, I got one here.
Okay.
The game-winning goal is scored by Bubba Bowen. First of all, great name. Second of all,
great name.
They go on a really super impressive defensive stand to close things out, where they hold Hampton Sydney to no goals over a 10-minute pit span. And during that span, they go on a 3-goal run themselves, which gives them the 1-goal lead. So, like, shout out to the defense. That's obviously really impressive there. But the game-winning goal scored by Bubba Bowen, great name, assisted by Ryan Pritchard, and this is where the personal anecdote comes, because I coached him in club, and awesome kid. Loved his energy, like total motor kid. You'd have loved him. He'd fit right in with your swarm team.
Love it.
So cool to see him, be able to take advantage of, you know, a really cool opportunity there. And then, like, Hampton Sydney just kind of shot themselves in the foot with penalties.
Man, you can't be doing that in conference play. You know, these are always come down to 1-goal games, little things, nitpicky like that, and that can be the deciding factor.
And, like, I say that, like, they didn't give up any goals, but they foul 5 times. And, you know, that's just 5 instances where, like, you know, it's either turning the ball over, it's making get into a flow, it's, like, putting pressure on your defense, it's forcing them to defend. Like, it's all sorts of things that aren't putting the pressure on offense, right?
Yep. Completely agree. So, great Tuesday night slate. Glad we were able to sort of wait that out and be able to recap that for the pod here. But let's keep it moving into some games that haven't happened. We'll start just with tomorrow night, Eastern York, the MAC playoffs here. This was a game that was a little bit tighter the first go around than I would have expected. So interested to see here if Eastern comes out, can give York some of that same energy that kept it close in the first game.
Are we sure that's right? I feel like in my head, Hood was going to...
Going to York?
It's on Inside Lacrosse, so it must be right.
That's where I get all of my lacrosse news and information, you know. Really consider Inside Lacrosse to be the source of the sport.
Well said. We should make that a slogan.
You should. I want royalties from that.
Well, they did lose to Hood, but it does appear that it didn't impact the rankings. Interesting. Or the seedings. Excuse me.
Huh. Look at that. Well, any thoughts for this one, Dan?
I think it's interesting. Like, Eastern always seems to have, like, a special energy for York, even, like, during our time playing and... in my time coaching, like, they always really brought, like, a special energy and, they're just always seem to be a little bit more ramped up for that matchup and want to, you know, try and take them down. And I feel the same way when Eastern plays Stevenson. Like, you can see them bring, like, an extra level of, physicality and just, like, energy to the field.
Yep. Yep, like that. Now let's move on to Thursday, where Thursday we got a couple good games. First one I definitely wanted to highlight was Muhlenberg going to Dickinson. This definitely fun one here. Would this be the semifinals?
Yep.
That's semifinal correct. Matchup.
Yep. The other matchup in the Centennial is what played out today with WAC and Gettysburg. That was essentially like your play-in, where that was a 4-5 to play Swarthmore. And then the other semifinal is what you're mentioning now.
Gotcha. And when is that Swarthmore game? I don't believe I had it on my calendar here. Do you know when that one's going to be taking place?
Same day and time, I believe.
Oh, day and time. Okay. So 7:00, not only will we have Swarthmore Gettysburg, but we will have Muhlenberg Dickinson as well.
AKA the Centennial Conference Semis.
Woo! Two excellent games. I don't know which one I'm going to be able to pick to watch, because both are going to be awesome. Who's going to have the screen for you, Dan? I mean, obviously, you're going to have two screens. You're going to digest them both at the same time, like Rain Man. But if you're a normal, regular person that can only afford one TV screen, what are you putting on?
There is no answer. The correct answer is pick your like most emotionally tied team. Start there. But you got to keep a peek on the IL scoreboard. And as the games evolve, you got to be changing based on the matchups and what the vibes are a little bit.
Fair enough. Yep.
Thank you.
Cool. Scoreboard, watch those a little bit. See what's
and
going
use
on.
Use the streams right on there to be able to bounce right from one to the other. We keep it nice and simple for you.
It's super easy, super convenient.
Take a stop into some stats.
Oh, I love hitting the scoreboard on game day.
A little scrolly poo.
It's my number one spot to hit. But additionally, on Thursday, we're also going to have Kenyon going to OWU.
NCAC action.
Yep, very excited about that. Is that a championship for him or a semifinal?
That's likely a semi. I'd have to check out their actual action. Denison would be the other side of that, right? Like Kenison.
Okay.
Kenison.
Yep, gotta be semi.
Kenyon and Denison would be the two that are most likely to play each other there in the championship for the NCAC.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep.
Not
yeah,
if
I believe
Denison has anything to say about it. I won't count him out. And
that's
they
why
just
you
took
play
Denison
the
to a bit of a tighter game than some may think or have expected. So it's possible, but like I said, the most likely
outcome. That's what we got to roll with, but that's why they play the game. So that should be a fun one. Denison plays Wooster, I believe, at the other end. So those two of them will be meeting up for that conference championship and AQ there. Very fun. Then Friday, we got St. Lawrence at RPI. Just game
yes.
after game this week.
Yep, and that'll be set up. I'll have to check. But that'll be set up for your next round right away with the Liberty League.
Boom. Right there. There you go. Fun one. Then Saturday, day before Selection Sunday, so before all the dust is settled, we have to finish some things out with Hamilton at Wesleyan for the NESCAC semis, and then on the other side, you have Middlebury at Bowdoin. Two, I think, going to be absolutely fun. Give me Wesleyan, give me Bowdoin to play in the championship, which do they play Sunday, Dan, at that point?
Yes, and we'll keep rolling with this, but don't let us forget to hit this other semifinal from the Liberty League.
Okay, of course. Of course, we will not forget that. So the championship there is going to be Sunday. I'll allude to a big dog, big take, but I'm seeing some red for the NESCAC championship.
Oh, man.
Leave it there for that. And then
if things don't go correctly, though, you are liable to a double jinx on this podcast. I hope you realize that.
A double jinx?
I mean, already gave him one.
That's true. Well, we didn't have him on it. We didn't make a whole show about it.
Don't
we
make
just,
it a we. Don't make this a we. This is a you
you're
now.
Just
this
as
is
much
you
that
now.
As
you
I
did
am, sir.
This. You reopened this case.
You're going down with me.
I'm in double jeopardy.
Well, I like the red there. I'll leave it at that. Leave it there. Championship Sunday. Going to be a fun one. And then the other side of the Liberty League, we're going to see Union taking on working. Give me a hint. Tigers. Yep. R.I.P. I knew it was in there somewhere. Tip of my tongue.
You had it.
Union RIT, which should be a good bout. I mean, if RIT is playing the way I've seen them play a majority of the season, it's going to be tough to beat them. But Union's going to give them a run for their money. You know, it's going to be a tight game. They're going to fight hard on the ground balls. They're going to make it to scrap. They got some good players, so it's going to be fun.
This will be for 25 straight. They might beat them 24 times.
But gosh darn it.
But if they're going to beat them 25 times, that also might happen.
You never know. And then, boom, we lead right into Selection Sunday, where by then we... What is it? Sunday night? It's normally around like 8 o'clock when all the picks sort of come out.
Yeah, I'll be sure to update this, and this is a good time to plug Bracketology. Probably should have done it in the first segment, but there will be a more in-depth Bracketology coming out that kind of predicts some things, lays out some current slate and current status of things should, a lot of the current results hold and current standings hold, all that type of stuff. So we'll have that. And included in that will be some more extra details on everything that you were just getting into.
Love it. Love it. Great plug. So make sure you're checking that out there. Ready to move on to Bet of the Week?
Yes. I don't know what I want to do, but give me a second.
You get to set the line this week after I regretfully take the cake last week going Cabrini. Going Salisbury -8.5.
Here's what I want to do.
For me. All right.
Here's what I want to do. We would be silly. We'd be silly not to at least wait a little bit and include Saturday's slate as potential games, right? And we don't really know what it is because that's dependent on a lot of Wednesday and Thursday.
Okay.
So I say we wait, we take it to social, and we pick a few good games for Championship Saturday for our Bet of the Week this week.
All right. I like it. Yeah.
All right. So we're going to punt on it for now and return to it graphic style.
Graphic style on Twitter. Make sure to follow at dkaplan46, at cabneo2. You'll get all the Bet of the Week information there.
All right. We're winding down here. Last few things. Let's go right into the big dog, big take. Unless you have anything else for us.
Yep. I'll go right into it here. Needed to start this off by saying I'm a genius. I said if there's one team that Tufts doesn't want to play right now a couple weeks ago, it's got to be Hamilton. They gave them a tough run for their money. They're not going to want to see them again. Boom, they saw Hamilton again. First round, what happened? The big dog fortune teller does it again. So I'll take the win there. Great job for the Hamilton boys. Next up, I alluded to it. Seeing a little bit of red for the NESCAC championship. Now that the Jumbos are out of the way, I think the Cardinals get rolling a bit. Should be an interesting championship run for them, but we'll see what happens. You know, they got to play the games first. And then kind of a take out of left field, Dan, but I don't think it's that crazy. So I don't think you're going to chastise me too hard for it here. But I think the national championship is going to roll through the Liberty League, not necessarily the Liberty League champion. But I think RIT, RPI, St. Lawrence, I think all three of those teams have a great opportunity, in front of them right now to take the national championship.
So if I gave you those three or the field, you're taking those three?
I'm taking those three. Yep.
Wow. That's a really good take. Spicy.
Thank you. Spicy.
I don't know if good as in it's hot. It's a spicy. It's adequate. It's okay. Right on the big dog, big take line.
On the meter. On the meter.
It's a great, it's registering very well.
Whew. Okay.
All right. Well, before we turn everybody loose, let's do some fun ones real quick. All right. Let's do some quick hitter predictions. All right.
All right.
First off, we're going to just go right through and do some conference champions predictions. Okay.
Hit me. I'm ready.
First team to come to your mind, conference champion.
You going to say the conference? Okay.
Should we do a different one? We'll do a different one because we spoke at the same time.
Okay.
Coastal Lacrosse Conference.
Give me Salisbury.
Liberty League.
RIT.
ODAC.
Ooh, that's a tough one right now.
This is not the first thing. The first team, ODAC.
This is hard, man. All right. First team.
You want to say Lynchburg, but your brain, your heart is telling you Lynchburg. Your brain is telling you WNL. And you, are just saying.
I'm going to throw them both out of the water, and I'm going to say Roanoke takes it.
Oh.
Yep. Yep.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Spicy. Okay. All right. I'm glad we did this segment.
That was fun. Do I get to do the same for you?
Do you want to?
Well, I'm going to pick three different leagues.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea. Okay.
Yep.
You can do as many as you want.
Okay. I'll do like three or four.
Okay.
All right. Ready?
Yeah.
Empire 8.
St. John Fisher.
Oh, okay. Centennial.
Swarthmore. Wow.
Okay.
I can't believe I said that.
That's kind of shocking. Fun one for you here. Landmark.
E-Town.
Oh.
They rebound. Okay. The late season loss to Susquehanna ends up being good for them. They rebound. They refocus. They readjust. They play hungry because they want to get to the gosh dang NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And they beat Susquehanna. I think they beat Scranton in the championship. I think Scranton beat Susquehanna in the semis.
Gotcha. Okay. Like that one. Last one here for you. The OAC.
Let's go Baldwin Wallace. Let's go with the BW boys to get it done.
Okay. Nice. Good pick. All right.
I think that is a fun league. I'm pretty sure it's a three-way triangle with John Carroll, Baldwin Wallace, Ohio Northern. And Ohio Northern beat John Carroll for the first time in, like, I think, program history. We talked about that earlier on the
podcast. Yeah, that was a big one.
Baldwin Wallace has been good. They're on a tear. They've won 5-6 straight games in a row. They're kind of peaking and playing with confidence. I'm on the Baldwin Wallace train there.
Love it. Good train to be on.
Caleb Fox. We could give a couple White Rose shout outs. We talked about Messiah. They're starting a freshman from also my high school, Howard High School, that also played for White Rose, the club team that I coached, 2023s. He's a freshman that's playing a whole bunch for them. Caleb Fox, Baldwin Wallace. We haven't talked about him all season, but they're obviously a team that kind of gets left out a little bit just based on geography. But every year when we do get to them they have some studs.
Yep. Agreed. All right, man. Well, anything else you want to hit here? I think that was a pretty good pod.
No, this is the best time of year, man. This is where, like, D1 starts to wind down. They get like 17 teams and it's just like, you know, the same 17 teams that we all hear about all the time. And even within that, it's like even more condensed. And this is where D3 gets really fun, right? Like, it's a huge tournament. 38 teams. It goes quick. It's a ton of action, but it's always really fun. We always get some good upsets, tons of good matchups. Braction reveal is always an entertaining day. Selection Sunday, like that whole like element is always cool. And teams will do the whole like in classroom videos, which, by the way, if you're listening to this, like, please tag us and all that type of stuff. Like, we will echo it as much as we can. Obviously, we don't have the largest following on earth, but we'll do what we can with all those types of stuff. Yeah, I mean, I really believe it. Like, this is the time of year where D3 fandom is, like, superior to the rest of lacrosse fandom.
All-time high. Yep.
It always is, but especially, especially come NCAA tournament time.
Love it.
Let's get to it.
Yep. All right.
Peace.
Love y'all.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.